Welcome to Whiskey Cask, the cask strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 193 for March 28th, 2009. Coming up in a few minutes.
In my small town, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, was a small town. It was four bourbon distilleries there when I was growing up. You know, some of your families worked at the bourbon distilleries in small communities. That's where the people worked. And I was fortunate enough to get on at the Wild Turkey Distillery and been there ever since.
That's the legendary Jimmy Russell, master distiller at Wild Turkey, who's celebrating his 55th year at the distillery this year. Much more with Jimmy in a few minutes, but first, let's look at the news. The results of this year's San Francisco World Spirits Competition are in, and the best of show winner among so-called brown spirits was Parker Beam's 27-year-old Heritage Collection bourbon from Heaven Hill. Among single malts, Diageo's Classic Malts bottling of 29-year-old Port Ellen was named Best Single Malt. Buchanan's Special Reserve 18-year-old was named Best Blended Scotch. 10-year-old single malt from Bushmills was named the Best Irish Whiskey. Wild Turkey Russell's Reserve Rye, the Best Rye Whiskey. The Yamazaki 18-year-old from Suntory was named the Best so-called Other Whiskey because it didn't fall into the other usual categories. There's a link for the complete results at the WhiskeyCast website. Last time around, we heard from Ian Buxton about the new book honoring Michael Jackson. Beer Hunter Whiskey Chaser was released on Friday with a celebration at the Whiskey Festival Noord-Nederland in Groningen. It's available worldwide through the Classic Expressions website now, and in North America through the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com starting this coming Monday. If you buy a copy through the WhiskeyCast website, I will donate all commissions from sales of Beer Hunter Whiskey Chaser to the Parkinson's Disease Foundation. It'll also be available at Malt Advocates Whiskey Fest in Chicago this week. There are still reports that White & Mackay is up for sale, and now Vijay Mallya has installed a new CEO at the company. John Beard joined White & Mackay this past week after 3 years as the UK CEO for Bacardi Brown Forman, which handled distribution of spirits for both companies in the UK. Former CEO Ashwin Malik is returning to India after 2 years at White & Mackay. Meanwhile, Beam Global Spirits and Wine has also named a new CEO. Matt Shattuck leaves Cadbury to take over for Tom Flacco, who stepped down last October. Shattuck has been responsible for Cadbury's operations in the UK, Ireland, the Middle East, and Africa. It's his first job in the spirits business. Now, I've never tried to hide the fact that Highland Park is one of my favorite single malts, and my all-time favorite Highland Park expression is now available again for a short time. Nearly 700 bottles of the 1977 Bicentenary 21-year-old release have been found in Japanese warehouses that were used by Highland Park's previous Japanese distributor. Edrington Group reclaimed the bottles, and they're now on sale through the distillery's online shop for £250 apiece. The same expression has been selling at auctions in the UK for as much as £300 each. The original price was £69.99. One of the treats of visiting a distillery or attending a tasting at a whiskey festival is the chance to taste new spirit as it's coming off the still. Buffalo Trace is now selling its White Dog spirit in its gift shop at the distillery in Frankfort, Kentucky. It's the only one of the major bourbon distillers that is selling White Dog spirit, as far as I know. A couple of sad notes to report this week. First, one of the best online whiskey communities is closing down. Jeroen Kloppenburg is shutting down the PeteFreak.com website and moving on to other projects. I've taken part in some of the discussions on his message boards, although not as often as I would have liked to, but his work has been valuable to the whiskey community at large, and I'd like to thank Jeroen for all the hard work he's put in over the years. Second, the global economic problems have forced the Malt Whiskey Society of Australia to cancel this year's Malt Whiskey Convention in August. Craig Daniels and his mates put on one of the best festivals in the world every other year, but had trouble finding sponsors to help cover the cost of this year's event. Here's hoping the economy recovers and they're able to mount a comeback 2 years from now. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The American Distilling Institute's annual conference starts April 3rd at St. George Spirits in Alameda, California. This event focuses on micro distillers, and there will be a public tasting during the conference. Jack Daniel's will hold its spring bottle signing next Saturday at the distillery in Lynchburg, Tennessee, and Buffalo Trace will hold its annual Easter egg hunt the same day at the distillery in Frankfurt. Whiskey Live Marseille is April 6th in Marseille, France. The Maker's Mark Thoroughbreds and Redheads Weekend is April 10th and 11th in Lexington and Loretto, Kentucky. And the Helsinki Beer Festival is that same weekend in Finland. Looking ahead to May, Springbank has announced an open house at Glengyle Distillery in Campbelltown on May 21st. It'll include master classes, the chance to buy a bottle of Kilcarran directly from the cask, and the global launch of the Kilcarran Work in Progress bottling. If you'd like to find out more about Kilcarran, check the archives for my interview with Springbank's Peter Curry in episode 183 from January. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig Quarter Cask.
Hi there, my name's John Campbell, Distillery Manager at Laphroaig Distillery. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Islay at laphroaig.com.
Back in 1954, young Jimmy Russell got a job at the Wild Turkey Distillery in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, and he never left. Over the last 55 years, Wild Turkey's won dozens of awards under Jimmy's leadership. Here's just the haul from this year's San Francisco World Spirits Competition. Double gold medals for the flagship Wild Turkey 101 Proof and the Wild Turkey Russell's Reserve Bourbon. Double gold and best rye whiskey honors for the Wild Turkey Russell's Reserve Rye, as I mentioned earlier, and silver medals for Wild Turkey Kentucky Spirit Bourbon and the Wild Turkey American Honey Liqueur. And what's more, Jimmy can tell a story just as well as he makes whiskey.
Austin Nichols Company has been in business since 1855. Now, actually, the Wild Turkey brand name started right after Prohibition. The family that owned the company, the McCarthy family, had their offices here in, up in New York City, and they were avid wild turkey hunters. And every year, a group of businessmen in the wine, spirits, food, and everything went on a big turkey hunt down in the Carolinas. And each year, you would bring food, I'd bring wine, spirits, whatever. Each year, they'd switch around. It was his year to bring some bourbon. He just called down in Kentucky and had them pull some out of the barrels. 101 proof. And, you know, sitting around night after hunting all day, they was drinking and eating. And they kept talking about, well, this is different than what we've been used to in the bourbon. And to make a long story short, next year they asked him, said, you bring some more of that same bourbon. He didn't know. He called back with all the government records we had to go through with. They looked back. And it was come out of the barrel, and it was 101 proof. Back in that day and time, and even when I started in the business, all bourbons was bottled at 100 proof, bottled in bond. It was no 80s or 90 proofs, is all 100 proof. Happened to be 101 proof. He said, well, if these people are in the business and likes the taste of it so well, I'm going to start marketing a 101 proof bourbon and call it Wild Turkey after the Wild Turkey hunt. And that's where he got his name from.
Now, what was the distillery producing before then in terms of bourbons?
Austin Nichols and other brands, but Austin Nichols and at 100 proof, and this happened to be 101 proof.
What happened in the years before Prohibition and then during Prohibition?
Well, the company been making, the fact's been some of our buildings and distillery right now goes back to 1890s. The family that owned it at that time, it's a big rock quarry right there beside the distillery. They mine the limestone out of. That's one of the reasons all the bourbon distilleries is located in that one little area in the central part of Kentucky, the limestone water. And the people have been used to making bourbon in the cold months, working the quarry in the summertime. So when Prohibition come in, they, you know, they was just working in the quarry. And that's reason some of our buildings are old, because they didn't, you know, they just sat there. And then when Prohibition went out in 33, they just went back, cleaned up, and started right back up again.
And then it wasn't much after that, but I guess maybe about, what, maybe 20, 30 years after that, that you came along, right?
I come in 54, and the Prohibition ended in 33, a year before I was born, and I went to work at the distillery in 1954.
Now, did you have a family history before you in distilling?
Yes. In my small town, Lawrenceburg, Kentucky, was a small town. It was four bourbon distilleries there when I was growing up. You know, some of your families worked at the bourbon distilleries in small communities. That's where the people worked. And I was fortunate enough to get on at the Wild Turkey Distillery and been there ever since. We're down to two bourbon distilleries now in Lawrenceburg, Kentucky. us and Four Roses. That's the only two distilleries left. But Old Joe Distilling Company and Hoffman Distilling Company and all them was there back in my younger days.
And that was really when you had distilleries all over Central Kentucky, right?
Well, if I'm not mistaken, when I started even in 54, there was 48 distilleries in Kentucky. We're down to 7 bourbon companies now with 9 distilleries operating.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing in your opinion?
Well, it both. You know, it, most of your families are, don't own them anymore, which a lot of them was family, and they couldn't stay in business with things the way it is now. And bigger companies absorbed. The brands are still there. But as bigger companies absorbs and consolidation down to 7 now.
Now let's get down to 1954. When you first got there, how did you get the job and where did you start?
Well, Faye, looking for a job, and they told me I was going to work in quality control. Now, that doesn't mean what it means today. I would be checking grains and fermenters, sampling everything. I might be up in that truck with a scoop shovel, shoveling that grain out of that truck before the day was over with. You done everything. Nowadays, you know, when you say quality control, they take the samples to them, they check them and everything else. But my day and time, you done just about a little better. And I was fortunate enough in that. In my day and time, when you started at a distillery, you usually started in one area of it, in the selling or the aging or the bottling, and that's where you spent the rest of your life. And I was fortunate enough, and the old master distiller at that time wasn't my family. But for some reason or other, I guess he took a liking to me, and he started training me, and he was a distiller before Prohibition. And he come back and put the distillery in operation. And he retired about 1966 or 7. And they promoted me up to the master distiller. So I've been the master distiller ever since then. And I've been blessed. My son, Eddie Russell, he's been with me for 28 years now. And he's the associate distiller, so he will take over when I leave. And it hadn't been easy for him. And he'll tell you, if you interview him, he'll tell you that he mowed grass, roll barrels and everything else. He'd come... I learned all the way up from bottom to top.
Same way you did, right?
Right, same way I did.
Now, tell me about your past, because you said you came from a distilling family, so I'm assuming your father, grandfather, before them were distillers, right?
Well, my father worked. He was lead in maintenance, and he actually worked for the Old Joe Distilling Company, and he finished up the rest of his time working for the Wild Turkey Distillery Company. My grandfather, on my mother's side, you never heard of this distillery. It was Saffel Distillery, S-A-F-F-E-L-L. That was an oldest. And after Prohibition, they never did go back in business. But, and I'm not going any further back because it might not be legal.
Now let's go from 1954 on, because you said you started out quality control, which meant you basically did everything. How did your mentor teach you about distilling?
Well, I went through every step of it. I run the cookers. Done the cooking. I done the fermentations. I done the yeasting. Run the still. In other words, just step by step by step. And the big thing about that, young and naive, you know, normally when you start on a job, you stay on it. Well, just about time I got everything down pat where I could, you know, kind of sit back and take it easy, it moved me someplace else. And I didn't realize what they was doing at that time, but that's what they were doing. They was training me on everything there so I would know from ground up how everything operated.
And you did the same with Eddie, right?
I done the same thing with Eddie. He's done the same thing. He's mowed grass, rolled barrels, run the still, cooked, done everything.
Now, does Eddie have a generation coming behind him?
I've got 2 sons. I hope one of them, you never know, you know. I didn't push mine. I got 2 sons. My oldest son was never in the business. My wife worked at the Wild Turkey Distillery too at one time. But, you know, never push them in if they want to be in it. But I hope one of Eddie's sons will go into business. And one of the reasons for that, Eddie's wife that works with me, she goes back great, great, great granddaughter of Elijah Craig. Elijah Craig is the one that invented bourbon. And our PR firm, you know, heard about that a few years ago. They're hoping one of them, what can you say? One of Eddie's boys goes into business, how long has your family been? they started today. But you never know what'll happen.
Especially since the Elijah Craig brand is owned by another company now.
I have an eel company, yes. Yes,
That's just part of that whole consolidation over the years that you talked about.
Yes, that's part of the consolidation over the years. And, you know, brands has been consolidated into different companies. And now, you know, Wild Turkey is still Wild Turkey. We don't have any other brands. That's all we – everything leaves – and when I started, we only had the one product, the 101. And then after several years up in the early 80s, we come out with the single-barrel bourbon, Kentucky Spirit. Then a little later on, we come out with a barrel-proof bourbon.
And let's talk about those three first. The taste differences between the single-barrel, the barrel-proof, and the regular 101. What are the differences in taste between these?
They have a different taste completely, but now I'll have to tell you this. The day it's made and put in a barrel, it's the same product, same percentage of corn, rye, barley, malt, same cooking temperature, same distillation temperature. Put in the barrel, it's the same proof. It's us selecting the barrels for at different ages to meet that standard taste. Like the 101 is a combination of 6, 8, and 10-year-old bourbons. My big concern, and it is this too, we want Wild Turkey to be consistent today, tomorrow, next week, 5 years from now. We want it to taste the same. And by selecting barrels for that standard taste, we're going to keep it that way. Now, the spirit, that's a single barrel. We don't have that choice of different barrels, because they come, but we're looking for barrels, in our opinion, taste the same for that particular taste for the spirit. And we just went through a tasting of all of them. And everybody, first thing they start asking me, now, how many did you make of this or that formula or this? They all taste different. But today it's made, it's the same product. And then the rare breed is 6, 8, and 12-year-old bourbons. Get a little more woody taste. And a rare breed and barrel proof. And our barrel proof, you know, we're still doing, I call it the old fashioned way. We're distilling it low proof, putting it, our barrel proof, you know, it increases in proof to an age. Our barrel proof bourbon only runs 108 to 109. And the first single barrels was Kentucky Spirit and Blanton's that I know of. And everybody has them now. And then the first two barrel proofs that I know on the market was Booker's. And rare breed, Booker's runs 120. He was a great friend of mine, passed away. But it run 124 to 126. Ours run 108. It depends on how you want it to taste and everything. It makes a difference in it.
Answer this for me if you can. I've always tried to find a good explanation for this because it's a question I get a lot. Why is it that when Scotch whiskies age as they get older, the proof goes down? And when bourbons age, the proof goes up. I've got some ideas that it has to do with the way it's the climate in which it's aged in. But you're the expert. You tell me why does that?
What it is? See, in bourbon, we have to use a new barrel. We can never use the barrel again. And to age bourbon properly, it has to be in a dry place. And in the summers in Kentucky, ours is metal-clad buildings with tin on the sides and ricks. You just roll the barrels in. And it gets real hot in the summertime. That bourbon expands out into that new charred oak wood. The wintertime, it extracts. And at that time, and it's amazing when you ask the question, you know, always think about alcohol evaporating a lot faster than water. But the pores in that wood are open, and that water is going out and leaving the concentration of alcohol. And we lose, in our aging process, the way we age, we have a lot of windows in our buildings. We open the windows in the summertime to get the good air circulation. And we lose about a third in 8 years of aging in our process. So that's evaporating out, and it's leaving the concentration of alcohol in there. Now, going to Scotland, Ireland, even bourbon, if you was in a damp, cool place where you didn't have that hot summers, and it would do the same thing. And then that barrel, the pores in that barrel is pretty well closed. You know, we've lost a third in it. So it's not really breathing like it would. If you brought scotch and put it in barrels in Kentucky in a dry place, warm, it would probably go up. But same way with bourbon. If we put it in a damp, cool place, it would go down and improve. Because it does, the barrel won't breathe, what we call breathing. And then you got that consolidation of condensation in that barrel dropping back water back down in the barrels. But that's a big difference in them.
Now, let's talk about the rest of the range, because you've added more expressions along the way.
Right. Well, we talked about the Spirit, single barrel, the rare. Now we have the Russell's Reserve. It's a 10-year-old limited edition small batch bourbon, which is excellent. Not because it's got my name on it. And I tell people I tease and cut up. I like to tease and cut up. If you don't like it, to call Eddie Russell, my son. He's responsible for it. If you like it, I'm the one to say. But it's something we got together with. It's some, and I've got to give you my personal taste. And I think if you talk to Eddie, he would say the same thing. I don't think bourbon really starts maturing until it gets about 6 years old. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. Now, I don't like a real old bourbon because in that range of 7 to 12, you've got the combination of the vanillas, the caramels, the sweetness, and the wood. The longer you leave it in that barrel, the more the white oak wood taste comes. If you like a lot of woody taste, you like an older bourbon. Me, personally, I just don't like a lot. I like the combination of all of them.
And then you've got the Russell's Reserve, right.
Now we come out with the Russell's Reserve rye. Now, the rye, Wild Turkey's always made a rye, Wild Turkey rye. Now, I'm just opposite on rye whiskeys. I think rye whiskeys reach your peak around 6 to 8 years old. They're more spicy, and all, and the longer you leave it in that new oak wood, the more spicy and more witty it becomes. But my personal taste, and the Russell's is 6-year-old rye. It's between 6 and 8 years old. And that's the age I like on good rye whiskeys.
The Russell's Reserve puts you in a very unique category because basically it's you, Elmer T. Lee, and Parker Beam that are the only living distillers that have whiskeys named after.
That's correct. We're the only three for a long time it was just Booker and I, and then Elmer, and now Parker's there, and then Booker passed away on us, so it's Elmer. We're all bitter enemies. We're all great friends. We're together all the time, and Elmer's getting way up there, but we're still seeing each other. He only lives 12 miles from me, so we see each other quite a bit.
Tell me about working around Elmer growing up. What was it like competing with him?
Well, we don't call it competing. It's competing one way, but we're close friends. We do anything we could to help each other, and we tease and go on all the time. And the fellow that runs Buffalo Trace, he was always trying to get Elmer and I together to get us to say. He finally says, no use to fool with them too. You're not going to get anything to say anything about each other. And same way we had some, the Thirsty Travelers. It's a television thing out of Canada someplace. Mm-hmm. They had an interview with us several years ago, and they were trying the same thing. They finally said, just quit. They're not going to say anything about each other except cutting up with each other, teasing one another, but they're not going to say anything about each other. And one of the greatest things in my memory, Booker was, got in bad shape and passed away. A magazine had done an article on Booker and Elmer and I. They'd done the stories on us. And Booker wasn't doing too well, so we went to Booker's home to do the photo shoot. And we was down there all day, and the three of us, and people was with us. We're supposed to be down there for a couple hours. It lasted all day, and there those people was having a great fun. We were too, on each other, going on and cutting up, and we had a great time. That's memories that I have with them three. I used to tease them a lot. Booker had been retired for several years. Elmer had been retired for a long time, and I was teasing them. I said, here you sit back home every day and do promotionals, and I have to go to work every day at the distillery. They'd laugh. And I still do. I'm still active in the distillery every day when I'm in town.
I never had the privilege of meeting Booker, no, because I got into whiskey journalism after he'd already passed on, sad to say. Tell me about Booker, no.
Do you know Fred Noel?
Oh, I know Fred.
That's Booker?
Yeah.
Just exactly. Except Booker was, Freddie's a big boy. I still call him Freddie. Fred's a big boy. His dad was larger than he was. I like to stand by Booker. He made me look small. But they're just exactly like Booker was. Booker was honest. I hope that's what you find with me, what we tell you, what I say. It's what I believe in. I'm not putting on a show or anything. Booker was the same way. Elmer's the same way. Parker's the same way. We tell you what we're doing. If we don't like it, we're going to tell you about it. We're not going to, the old saying in Kentucky, we're not going to beat around the bush about it. It's what we think about it.
Tell me about Parker Beam now, because it seems like the Russells, the Beams, few of the other families around there have been in distilling a long time.
We've been in a long time. And this is another thing is I like so well about it, think so much about it. Booker and I have been close friends forever. Parker and I have been close friends forever. And Bill Samuels, but now Bill's a little more in marketing and all. And even Bill's daddy. And then Bill's son, right? But you got Craig Beam, Parker's son, you got Fred Booker's son, and Eddie, my son, and they're all close friends. So you'll have to put up with the Nose and the Beams and the Russells for a long time.
Now, I have to ask, do you have any Nose or Beams working for you?
No, we don't. No, we don't. Uh-oh.
Because I know there's a bunch of Nose working for other distilleries, a bunch of Beams working for other distilleries, and all that. And it's sort of this running joke. Yeah.
Parker works for Heaven Hill.
Yeah.
Craig works for Heaven Hill.
It really is just sort of one big family.
Well, you know, Freddie's wife, not Freddie's wife, I'm getting old and feeble, Booker's mother was a Beam. Booker Nose's mother was a Beam, her sister to the original Beams. And then down the line, still is Beam family, but and then say that it's a lot of Beams out at a lot of different distilleries. I know for many years it was one with Seagram's. It was one at different places. It's always been Beams at other distilleries, too. There's two or three sets of that Beam family. They all go back to the same original, but they worked at a lot of different distilleries.
If you had to go back and change anything about the way things have worked out in the whiskey business over your years in the business, what would you go back and change?
Well, really, we haven't changed nothing with Wild Turkey. The same formula, same cooking temperature. We've been fortunate, or I have, let me make it the same way all the time. You know, the bottom line is what counts. It's the expensive way we make Wild Turkey with a low proof, putting it in a barrel. We just don't pay a premium for our grains. They let me make it the way I want it, where, you know, nowadays everybody's looking. The biggest change, and it's helped more than anything, when I started, you done everything by hand. You run the still by hand. You have one hand on a pump, pumping into the still. You had nothing on the steam controlling the proofs and everything. You've got better equipment now. We still have that person sitting there, but you got equipment that makes that adjustment for you. And that's a little better because, you know, equipment's a little quicker than an individual sitting there with it, but we still have a person sitting right there with it, making sure that it meets the standards that we're looking for. And the worst problem I had when we started putting in this equipment several years ago, the people that had been running the steel makes a certain sound. We call it whistling. And if it changes, it means something's changing in the steel. You need to add more steam or more product, fermented mash going into steel. And when we first put in the equipment, well, that was, for a long time, that was the hardest thing we had. The people running the steels, they'd been so used to making adjustments yourself. When it's changed sound, they just want to run over and do the adjustments yourself. That was one of the biggest things that we had. But that's the biggest thing. You got, you know, better equipment now.
Did that help make the whiskey more consistent from batch to batch?
I think so. I mean, our steel operators were excellent. But, you know, you're more, if something happened to happen, you wasn't right there. But with equipment, it's going to take care of that.
One of the really interesting things that's really sort of developed over the last few years is the whole bourbon tourism thing.
Right.
Because now you've got passionate Wild Turkey fans that are coming to visit you guys in Lawrenceburg.
Everybody out like what I'm doing right now, it was marketing salespeople. There wasn't nobody from production out in the field. And Austin Nichols Company, over 20 years ago or longer, decided they wanted me to go out and work with our salespeople and talk to people and explain how it operated. Now everybody has somebody about it. But I was the first one that I know of was out doing that. And now everybody has them. But an amazing thing to me over the years, when I started, bourbon is whiskey, it's all the same. People didn't have a lot of understanding about what it was. Nowadays, people knows. They know all about it, how and everything about the different ones and everything. It's amazing to me how much, and I think part of this is the bourbon trail, part of it's y'all stories and videos and things like that. People's wanting to know. they're becoming better educated themselves. They're on the internet, some all these bourbon society. They've got their own clubs and everything, and they're looking and they're studying about it, same way as the scotches and everything else went down.
How much longer are you going to do this?
Well, I don't know. You know, I'm in good health. I tell people now, you know, when you're young, you have to work. Take care of your family. But now I work because I enjoy it. It's really not work to me. It's something I love to do. I go to still, I'm there every day. My wife says I'm there all the time. I live 6 miles away. You know, it takes me less than 10 minutes to get to work every day. And even on Saturdays and Sundays, I'll be out there. Maybe drive through and say hello to people running the stills and cookers and things, you know, and things like that. I'm in and out there all the time. Through the week, I'm there every day, 8 hours or more, if I'm not out traveling. And I'm at the plant 90% of my time. A lot of people think I'm traveling all the time, but I'm not. 90% of my time, year-round, I'm at the plant.
What do you want your legacy to be?
Well, you know, knowing the biggest thing I want is Wild Turkey being consistent. That it tastes the same today, tomorrow, 20 years ago. That's my thing. I want to be known as making a Wild Turkey bourbon was consistent in flavor and taste the whole time I was there. And I can promise you this, it will for the next 8 to 10 years, or 12, I can't guarantee you after that. That's what I'm making and putting in the barrel now, so I know what it's going to be. So after that, if something happens, you know, I won't promise that, but I know up until what's probably 2022, that part of it, if you buy a Russell's or 101 or Rare Breed, it's going to be consistent in flavor and taste.
If you're visiting Central Kentucky, Lawrenceburg is just down the road from Frankfort and a short drive off Interstate 64 to visit the Wild Turkey Distillery. That's all for this episode of Whiskey Cast. Don't forget that the book honoring Michael Jackson, Beer Hunter Whiskey Chaser, will be available starting this Monday through the Whiskey Cast store powered by Amazon.com. And I'll give my share of the proceeds to the Parkinson's Disease Foundation. There's a link at the Whiskey Cast website. That's also where you'll find links, the calendar of events, my whiskey ratings, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@whiskeycast.com. I'd love to hear from you. Whiskey Cast is a production of MG Media, copyright 2009, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.